First of all, I would like to thank everybody for coming to my presentation. Now you can hear me?
Yeah.
All right. So, did you know that coal fly ash contains potential toxic elements? So today I'm going to talk about a little bit fly ash and about our recent research that is focusing on the potential toxic elements in coal fly ash. Our research group includes Dr. Dean Hesterberg, Owen Duckworth, David Bookwalter, and Robert Austin from NC State University, and Dr. Colin Ward from University of New South Wales, Australia. Just very basic that fly ash is a byproduct of coal combustion, and it's generated by the coal-fired power plants. And every year, like millions of tons of fly ash is produced worldwide. So not all of it recycled, only about 40% of it is recycled, and rest of it has to be disposed of either in the ash ponds, big ash ponds in form of slurry, or in landfills in dry form. So and there are always reports of water contamination near these waste disposal sites. There could be many reasons, like leaching from these waste disposal sites, but there are there could be direct entry of ash in the soil and water system by spills. So And this picture is of Kingston fossil plant that is located in Tennessee in eastern USA. And this plant is responsible for the Grant ash spill that happened in December 22, 2008. And one of the containment ponds collapsed, and it released more than 1 billion gallons of ash. So I can't really think how big this is, so I just compare this whole pond with these cars parked here, just to get an idea that how big this spill was. And the ash made its way to the confluence of Clinch and Amory rivers, as we can see here on the aerial image. And not only that, it entered in the rivers, but it also entered the residential areas. And it was at such a huge mass that it carried away houses, railway lines. So not only that, this ash contaminated the soil and water bodies, but also there is a potential of release of toxic elements from it. So that's why we are interested in studying fly ash. So first of all, I would like to tell you that fly ash is very heterogeneous material, just like soils. As we can see here in this micrograph, that it contains different size particles, both spherical and irregular. So not only that, it's morphologically heterogeneous, but chemically as well. If we think about it at the nanoscale, it contains different mineralogical phases. Those could be like very inert, chemically inert to highly reactive. So these trace elements, which are potentially toxic, they are associated with these phases. So depending upon the reactivity of these phases, the release of these toxic elements in the environment would be determined. So as well as it also depend upon what kind of environment it is. So secondly, The release of these elements will also will also depend upon the chemical speciation of these metals. So some metals are more mobile and bioavailable in the oxidized form, while others are more bioavailable and toxic in the reduced form. So we need to consider, so broadly we are considering two factors that will from that we can determine the release of these potential toxic metals. That first we are interested in determining the various phases, and second the chemical speciation. So hence our objective is to determine the chemical speciation and spatial distribution of these toxic trace elements in fly ash in relation to mineralogy. So we studied three fly ash samples, two from the Kingston power plant and one from the Johnsonville power plant. Both are located in Tennessee. And we determined four kind of information using different techniques. First of all, we determined the elemental composition by totally dissolving the samples in strong acids and also using neutron activation analysis. And then we studied the mineralogy using conventional as well as synchrotron X-ray diffraction, and studied the chemical speciation using X-ray absorption spectroscopy, and finally the nanoscale elemental distribution using hyperprobe. We found that four elements, silicon, aluminum, calcium and iron, they form the major constituents of fly ash matrix. This chart that shows their concentration on oxide basis tells us that the 85% of fly ash matrix is made up of these four elements, and a bunch of alkali and alkaline earth metals also form the significant fraction, about 6%, and that could be one reason that these fly ash samples are highly alkaline in pH. They all vary from 9 to 12, and the unburnt carbon also forms significant fraction from 5 to 8%, followed by titanium and sulfur. Trace elements form 0.1% on weight basis. And if we see, in these trace elements, we included the included elements, those are really of major concern. So those are selenium, germanium, arsenic, chromium, zinc, copper, manganese, and lead. And we found that their concentrations are 4 to 20 times what we expect in the uncontaminated soils. So our laboratory X-ray diffraction patterns for all three samples showed us that both glass and minerals are present in fly ash. And the presence of glass is indicated from this hump, that is a diffused peak, from 17 degree to 37 degree theta. And the minerals are shown by these discrete peaks. And then we run the full profile retrieved analysis to quantify glass and minerals in these samples. And we found that glass made the dominant portion, and minerals made the rest from 39 to 43%. And among minerals, quartz and moolite, quartz, which is silicate mineral, and moolite is aluminosilicate mineral, form the 40% of this fly ash matrix, which is next to glass. And then calcium and iron minerals, among calcium is anhydrite, lime and calcite, and among iron minerals, hematite and magnetite form the next up to 5%. So to determine the We also run the synchrotron X-ray diffraction to determine the minor phases. We found that in synchrotron X-ray diffraction, the peaks were better resolved compared to in X-ray laboratory X-ray diffraction, and this enabled us to find phases which we couldn't find in the laboratory XRD. So, for example, in fly ash A, along with the quartz mullite and anhydrite that we found in XRD, we also found rutile, magnetite, calcite, and hematite. So this technique gave us a bit more information compared to laboratory XRD. So then we determine the chemical speciation of iron and potentially toxic trace elements using X-ray absorption spectroscopy. As we got more knowledge about this technique in our previous presentation by Daniel in a very nice way, so I'm not explaining it in that detail, but I would just like to tell you that X-ray absorption spectroscopy can give us information about the local coordination environments of atoms of particular element, and according to that we get this absorption spectra. And we divide the absorption spectra in two regions. One is X-ray absorption near edge structure, that is near the edge. So this gives us information more about the oxidation states of these elements. And then is the excess, that is extended X-ray absorption fine structure. So that's the magnification that tells us more about the coordination number and bond distances, things like that. So to determine the speciation of these elements in our fly ash samples, we also collect the data on some mineral standards, and we prepared some glass standards in our lab by adding trace elements. And then we use the linear combination fitting technique. So in this technique, we linearly combine the spectra from our standards, like minerals and glass standards we did here. And then we get the resultant spectra that matches well with our sample spectra. So in this way, we get some information about the various phases present in our sample spectra. So in the next slide, I will be showing some XFs, spectra of iron. So this graph shows us the XF spectra for all of our three fly ash samples. So we can see that the hollow squares are our data, actual data, and the solid lines are the fit. And these lines show the excess spectra for our standards. So if we visually see, we can see that our fly ash spectra resembled more closely with the ferrihydrite and iron in glass compared to the highly crystalline iron minerals. So when we run this linear combination fitting, we saw that ferrihydrite forms the highest concentration from 60 to 75%, followed by iron in glass and fractions of magnetite and hematite. And this information is consistent with our X-ray diffraction. So this tells us that more of the iron is present in the amorphous to poorly crystalline state. And this dense analysis gives us information about the oxidation states. And this graph shows us the spectra for fly ash samples and selenite and elemental selenium. And it tells us that because the peak position matches with selenite, so selenium is mostly in the selenite form in our fly ash samples. Similarly, we did with the arsenic. These are the spectra for our flyer samples, and these are our standards. And we can see that these spectra match well with arsenic pentoxide and arsenic 5 in glass and calcium orthoarsenate. And it tells us that dominant form of arsenic in fly ash is arsenic 5. And then the linear combination fitting results showed that arsenic 5 forms the major fraction from 50% to 80% in fly ash, and there are some other oxide and calcium arsenate present. Similarly, for other metals, we can see that the red color shows the glass, so their percentage in glass is quite significant, especially for strontium and zinc, and there are some other phases present as well. Okay. Then we did some spatial distribution analysis using HyperProbe, and we scanned the surfaces of our fly ash particles at different energies to identify different elements and their concentrations, and those are known as like X-ray maps, and then we combined the individual X-ray maps for like for here silicon, calcium and aluminium to get the composite map. And from this map we can get the information that silicon is, well, first of all the elements are present in some discrete forms, and some forms like silica is more dominant, and while in others silicon and aluminium both are present, and again some places calcium is more dominant, but others calcium and silica are present, or calcium and aluminium are present. So to get more information we run the correlation analysis. So this graph shows the on y-axis percentage of images and on x-axis element pairs, and this green shows that high correlation, red shows medium, and blue shows low correlation. And this tells us that aluminum and silicon are highly correlated, which we can relate with the moolite that we found from X-ray diffraction, and the medium correlation relates with the aluminosilicate glass. Similarly, the medium correlation with the aluminium, calcium, aluminium ion and calcium ion tells us that probably there are some calcium and ion rich zones in the glass, or they are present as coatings on these minerals or glass particles, and the low correlation shows the dispersion of these metals in the glass. So with this, I would like to conclude my seminar that fly ash contained predominantly glass along with the quartz and moolite, and the toxic trace elements are often dispersed in glass. So from this we can conclude that because these fly ash samples are highly alkaline, and probably it can dissolve that aluminosilicate glass easily. So there is a risk of release of these toxic elements in the environment. And also that all the three techniques which I used, they gave us the complementary information for this heterogeneous system. With this, I would like to thank our funding agencies, Tennessee Valley Authority and Oak Ridge Associated Universities, and all the three beamlines we used, Brookhaven National Laboratory, Argonne National Laboratory, and Stanford Synchrotron Radiation Light Source. All our colleagues who helped us in this research, and to all of you, and I would welcome if there is any question.